يوسف جلالي بتهران.
روباشافت غازا.
جيروم هيوز بروسلز.
سعيد بورزا لندن.
رشا سغلام اسطنبول.
سعيد امين عالمي كابول.
شاهان بات Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Several prominent Iranian figures have paid a visit to the Hamas bureau in Tehran to express their condolences for the martyrdom of the resistance group's leader, Yahya Sinwar. Among them were the Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian and the commander of the Quds Force of Iran's IRGC, Brigadier General Ismail Qaani. The high-ranking officials remember Sinwar for the lasting impact he has left on the resistance.
When you look at the way he lived as a hero, and he died as a legend. So that has left an imprint in the minds of every human being. So that's why the martyrdom of Yahya Sinwar was a great, I think, asset for the resistance, because that will bring the resistance into more resilience.
Sinwar's legacy as a resistance leader was forged not only in battle, but also during his long imprisonment in Israeli jails, where he endured years of suffering. His leadership, shaped by personal sacrifice, became a symbol of defiance for Palestinians. To many, he embodied the resilience of the Palestinian struggle.
Unfortunately, the very governments and powers that preach human rights, democracy, humanity, and international law are the ones violating all of these principles they claim to uphold. They support a regime that has forcibly expelled people from their homes and displaced them. When these people seek to reclaim their rights and land, the U.S. and European countries arm Israel to the teeth, enabling every inhumane crime. Shockingly, they defend these actions with brazen pride.
Western nations often call for de-escalation in conflicts, yet their continued financial and military support for Israeli actions, including targeted assassinations, only fuels further unrest. Their rhetoric of peace contrasts starkly with their actions on the ground.
The Israeli regime is finished. This is because its treasury is empty, and the U.S. has begun pouring money into it. Its ammunition has run out, so they've brought in U.S. supplies to refill their stockpiles. On the front lines, its strength depleted, and their missile defense systems have proven ineffective. At this point, the resistance is at war with both the U.S. and the U.K. The remnants of the Israeli army are kept afloat only with the help of these powers.
The growing weakness of Israel's military and economic standing signals a critical shift in the region. With Sinwar's legacy of resistance deeply rooted in this struggle, those gathered in his memory are determined to continue along the same path. Martyr Yahya Sinwar is mostly remembered for his leadership skills and unwavering commitment to the Palestinian cause. Now people who came here say it is his legacy that continues to fuel and inspire those following in his path and pave the way to the ultimate victory. Ali Ramazani, Tehran.
A charity event known as the Golden Jihad was organized by the Iranian people in the capital Tehran to donate their treasured gold coins and jewelry in support of their brothers and sisters in Lebanon. This gesture of solidarity follows intensified Israeli attacks on civilians and resistential areas in Lebanon. Iranians expressed greater resolve to contribute in the donation after Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, leader of the Islamic Revolution, called for aid to the Lebanese people.
After our leaders ordered us to aid the Lebanese people, we decided to participate in the donation. We consider it our religious duty to help the oppressed people of Lebanon and Gaza, and to support the resistance front. We also want our children to become familiar with the noble path of resistance.
Our message to the oppressed people of Gaza and Lebanon is that we know how much they are suffering, as we have also experienced war. During the 8 years of war with Iraq, we also suffered. We want to be a part of this massive donation process that is underway in Iran.
Children also played a significant role in the event, offering their cherished belongings for the noble cause with small hands but big hearts.
I know that the people of Gaza and Lebanon need this help. My message to the Israeli regime is that you are nothing, and you can do nothing while confronting the resistance.
When it comes to humanity, no freedom-seeking person can remain silent. These acts of solidarity and fundraising are powerful reminders of the importance of supporting the oppressed, regardless of one's faith.
What we do is our duty as human beings, not just because we are Muslims. I believe that now it's everyone's dream around the world to see the annihilation of the Zionist regime.
Once again, Iranians demonstrate their unwavering solidarity with the people of Lebanon and Gaza through this fundraiser and donation drive. Their support extends beyond financial aid, serving as a powerful testament to the unity and strength within the resistance front. Farzan Ashuryun, Tehran.
In honor of the late Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar, Palestinian resistance leaders and representatives from several factions gathered in Yarmouk camp, a symbolic place for the Palestinian struggle. In emotional speeches, they hailed Sinwar as a heroic leader and pledged that the path of resistance will continue until the liberation of Palestine. Sinwar's legacy as one of the masterminds behind the Al-Aqsa flood operation was highlighted in the event. Speakers credited his strategic brilliance and sacrifice as an inspiration for the Palestinian struggle, calling his final moments before martyrdom an act of epic defiance. Yahya Sinwar, imprisoned by Israel for 23 years, was released in a prisoner exchange deal. In captivity, he wrote novels that explored themes of resistance and freedom, influencing young Palestinians. Leaders emphasized unity among Palestinian factions, noting that Sinwar's sacrifice has reinforced solidarity. The speeches called on Palestinians worldwide to strengthen their efforts in pursuit of freedom and the right of return to the homeland.
The memorial held in the Yarmouk camp is more than a tribute to Yahya Sinwar. It is a rallying cry for Palestinian factions to continue their fight for liberation. His legacy, both on the battlefield and through his words, will remain a guiding force. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
For over 2 weeks, the Israeli military has been pounding the camps of Jabalia, Beit Lahia and Beit Hanun in northern Gaza. It has killed more than 670, wounded thousands of others and starved the 400,000 people there in an attempt to ethnically cleanse them. Israeli attacks have interspersed hospitals in the north, targeting the three medical hubs and depriving them of any medical aid or supplies for over 2 weeks. With two already out of service, Kamal Adwan Hospital remains the only one to treat thousands of daily wounded people as it remains under constant Israeli bombings. Healthcare professionals have appealed to the world for help and they have run out of barrier shrouds today as they are being killed in mass every day and even the hospital has become a mass grave.
Hospitals that people seek out during crisis, death and injuries have been and still are one of Israel's main targets in northern Gaza. Therefore, major hospitals such as the Kamal Adwan, the Indonesian and Al-Auda have been repeatedly targeted. Over the past days, the Israeli army released evacuation orders to all medical complexes in northern Gaza and directly threatened healthcare professionals as well as patients inside the hospitals.
People in the northern camps, especially in Jabalia camp, are literally living through disastrous circumstances. The Israeli military is incessantly imposing a strict siege on the north for more than 16 days, blocking medical and food supplies from getting in. People there are going through a fully painted, deliberate starvation policy.
Today's attacks on the camp have killed at least 34 people, while entire families are wiped out, all neighborhoods obliterated, innocent people rounded up and beaten, and hospitals heavily bombed. These deliberately starved people face inevitable death.
This wouldn't have happened had the world intervened. And this is not the first time these camps have been invaded. While being under Israeli relentless attacks, doctors inside Kamal Adwan Hospital have pledged to stay and sacrifice their lives. However, the word remains silent on the extermination of a full innocent people. Abu Bakr Abid, from inside the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah, Gaza.
Hundreds of Jordanians participated in a protest near the American embassy in Amman, condemning U.S. support for Israel and its wars against Gaza and Lebanon. They demanded an end to the genocide against Palestinians, particularly in northern Gaza.
After more than a year, Zionists continue to impose siege, killing, extermination, and starvation in Gaza and Jabalia, with global silence as the dominant response. The United States is complicit in all of this alongside Israel.
During the Monday evening march, organized in response to a call from the National Forum for Supporting Resistance, protesters condemned continued U.S. support for Tel Aviv. They also criticized what they referred to as American involvement in the Israeli war on Gaza and the massacres in northern Gaza.
The U.S. administration plays a central role in the mass extermination carried out by the Israeli regime. Sadly, the international community continues to approach such crises with double standards, turning a blind eye to the atrocities in Gaza, particularly in Jabalia, where a full-scale extermination is unfolding in every sense of the word.
We are here at the invitation of the National Forum for Supporting Resistance and Protecting the Homeland. We are protesting from the outset of this brutal war on Gaza, a war of genocide. Our message to the world and the international community is clear. The killing, destruction, and mass extermination taking place in Gaza must be stopped.
Israel continues its war, ignoring the United Nations Security Council's resolutions to halt it immediately and the International Court of Justice's orders to take measures to prevent acts of genocide and improve the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza. Participants urged Washington to stop its ongoing support for the occupation.
Demonstrators hold the U.S. responsible for the ongoing massacres in Gaza due to Washington's support for Israel, demanding a change in policies that enable the regime's genocide. Zaid Agarbe, Amman.
Imad Abu Taimi used to create magic on the field of Al Dura Stadium with his club Tahad Khan Yunis, a top contender for Gaza's Premier League title, who also played for the Palestine national team. But Israel killed the promising 21-year-old along with 9 members of his family in the east of Khan Yunis last week, adding another person to the list of more than 350 football players killed by Israel. Gaza has lost its finest and most renowned players, including legend Mohammed Barakat, Gaza's first centurion, of course. Even Gaza's managers and club's directors haven't been spared by Israeli attacks, with Ittihad Shija'iyya's club director also murdered.
We decry the deliberate targeting of football players in Gaza. The players don't pose any threat to Israel. We're just civilians in this genocide. We appeal to FIFA for help. We call them out to look at us and see our players. Our future has been destroyed. Our stadiums have been demolished. We have nothing left now.
FIFA has always had a negative look towards our cause. We Palestinian people have been displaced for an entire year. 500 athletes have been killed by Israeli forces. We only need one thing from them, which is to look at us as humans. Even though we're facing massacres, we still watch football. We need them to call the sporting community out in all leagues and games to act and stop the genocide.
Among those footballers killed by Israel, around 90 children who dreamt of being professional football players one day. The Israeli military has even demolished Gaza's football academies, once filled with talent. Despite all this horror, everyone in Gaza is still connected with football, finding solace in watching and playing their favorite game.
At least 2 footballers from every club in Gaza have been killed. Some have lost 5 or even more. FIFA's continued silence and disgraceful stance on Israel's war crimes against the sports in Gaza will allow only more slaughtering within its sporting community. Abu Bakr Abid, Deir al-Balah, Gaza.
The people of Pakistan held a memorial in Islamabad to pay tribute to the martyrs of resistance who were killed fighting Israeli aggression in West Asia. The event gathered a diverse group of attendees, including political leaders, human rights activists, students, and scouts, all coming together to honor the legacy of a mass resistance leader, Yahya Sinwar, and other fallen leaders.
Hamas is showing that no matter how many leaders are targeted, the movement will not be crushed. The resistance will continue because it's driven by the collective will of the people, not just by individuals. To its enemies, particularly Israel, Hamas is sending a signal that their strategy of eliminating leaders won't weaken the movement.
The participants emphasized that the blood of martyrs will bring an end to the hegemony of the oppressors, inspiring future generations to stand against tyranny and fight for their rights.
The sacrifices of the martyrs will further strengthen the resistance movement. The sacrifices made by resistance leaders, as well as the people of Palestine, will galvanize supporters, inspiring renewed determination to continue the fight for justice and freedom.
Other than the capital, rallies were also held across Pakistan to denounce Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza that has left tens of thousands of men, women, and children in the past 1 year.
A genocide in Gaza. And Israel, a terrorist state, an illegal terrorist state which commit crime against humanity. I condemn the brutality, the terrorism, the crime against humanity of the Israel, and I also condemn the silence of the OIC and of the international institutions.
Allahu Akbar.
Funerals in absentia were also held in mosques and public squares for Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar, with participants expressing solidarity and honoring his contributions to the resistance.
The assassination of Yahya Sinwar by Israel has provoked widespread condemnation from human rights advocates and Muslim-majority nations, with many decrying it as a breach of international law that is likely to ignite further tensions in the Middle East. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Imam Khamenei, the leader of Islamic Revolution, led the Friday prayer on October 4, 2024, in the Imam Khomeini Musalla, following the martyrdom of the Mujahid on the path of God, Martyr Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, and on the eve of the first anniversary of the epic Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. This is the Imam Khamenei's first sermon in Tehran's Friday prayer. The enemy's methods vary in different countries. They use psychological warfare in some places and economic pressure in others. In some places, they use two-ton bombs and weapons. But in other places, our enemies pursue their policies with smiles. Nonetheless, the command center is one place. They receive orders from one place. They receive the orders to attack Muslim communities and nations. If this policy succeeds in one country, meaning if they manage to dominate one country, they proceed to target the next nation once they are assured of their control over the previous country. Nation mustn't allow this to happen. If a nation wants to avoid a crippling siege by the enemy, it must open its eyes from the very outset and be vigilant. When it sees the enemy going toward another nation, it should consider itself to be an ally of that innocent nation that is being oppressed. It should help them and cooperate with them so that the enemy doesn't succeed there. If the enemy succeeds in that place, it will move on to the next target. We Muslims have been negligent with regard to this reality for many years and have witnessed the repercussions resulting from this.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Today we must no longer be negligent. We need to remain vigilant. We must fortify our defenses and firmly protect our independence and dignity from Afghanistan to Yemen, from Iran to Gaza and Lebanon, in all Islamic countries and nations. This is the first topic I wanted to discuss today. Today I will be mostly addressing our Lebanese and Palestinian brothers who are faced with problems. I will address these issues in the next sermon. The second point I wanted to share now with you is that the Islamic rulings on defense have made our duty clear. The second point I wanted to share now with you is that the Islamic rulings on defense have made our duty clear. Both Islam's laws on defense, our own constitution, and international laws that we didn't help to draft, both even those laws affirm this undeniable fact that every nation has the right to defend its land, home, country, and interests against aggressors. What this means is that the Palestinian people have the right to stand against an enemy that has seized their land, occupied their homes, destroyed their farms, and ruined their lives.
Allah, I want to thank you. Things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Option for today and a better tomorrow.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as brutal and devastating as the Israeli genocidal war on Palestinians in Gaza has been, it reached a new low, if possible, during the last 2.5 weeks in northern Gaza. The IOF laid a starvation siege on the area, not allowing any food or supplies in, and the regime continued striking the area. During the last 17 days, at least 640 more Palestinians have been killed. This is a settler colonial regime doing the bidding of other settler colonial regimes, and that is the reason the Western hegemonic front not only doesn't stop the Zionists' killing spree, it contributes to it, whether in occupied Palestine or Lebanon or elsewhere. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Charlotte Cates, from the International Coordinator, Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver. And Ken Stone, Executive Committee Member of Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War out of Hamilton. Well, thank you both for being with me. I'm going to start this off with Charlotte. UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, has called the conditions in the besieged area of northern Gaza as beyond catastrophic. What does this mean to be said by a UN agency in your perspective?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the United Nations has been watching the situation in Gaza, throughout Gaza, including in the north. This is like the second or third or fourth time that the situation in northern Gaza has been catastrophic for people. And this is, the United Nations has been standing by watching this occur, largely because the United States holds veto power in the Security Council. And so what we've seen is the rest of the world outraged at the ongoing crimes against the Palestinian people in Gaza, against the ongoing genocide. And the United States and its partners not just vetoing any resolution that aims to stop it in the United Nations, but actively funding, arming, and providing more weaponry, logistical, material support, now troops on the ground that are undisputed in order to continue the genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. So, you know, obviously it reflects the truth of the situation. It reflects the fact that tens of thousands of Palestinians have been killed. It reflects the fact that right now Palestinians in Jabalia and throughout northern Gaza are being bombarded, are being targeted, are being subjected to ethnic cleansing, to mass killing, to forced removal and transfer, to forced deportation, to extrajudicial killings, to field executions and assassinations because of the fact that they are staying on their land and refusing to be subjected to ongoing ethnic cleansing and killing. The fact is that Palestinians, northern Gaza is the first part of Gaza that was attacked on October 8th of 2023. And Palestinians in the north of Gaza were told that they need to leave their homes to be safe from the Zionist from the Zionist forces. But the fact is that the genocidal Zionist forces attacked them as they were marching from the north of Gaza to the south, that they've attacked them every single place that they have gone. And now they're attacking them again now that they are back in northern Gaza. And so it's time for the United Nations to stop issuing words of concern about the humanitarian situation. This is not an earthquake. This is not a tornado. It did not happen, and just kind of cause a humanitarian disaster. There is an act of genocide being perpetrated by the United States, by the Zionist regime, and by their imperialist partners. And it's time that real action is taken to put it to an end.
Okay, well, Ken, what about that when we look at the United Nations? I mean, it just seems basically, are we looking at the end of the United Nations? I mean, because if it can't prevent people from being intentionally starved to death and bombed to death by a so-called member state, then what good is it?
Oh, well, thank you for asking, Marcia. But I'd like to preface my response by stating that I'm in complete solidarity with, and I agree with today, Charlotte's remarks. I'm in solidarity with her because your viewers may not know that she was arrested about 4 or 5 months ago in Vancouver at a demonstration. And while she has yet to be charged with anything, she has been slapped with a gag order, which prevents her from exercising her freedom of speech or attending public demonstrations, rallies, and so on. And just the other day in Canada, the Trudeau government placed her organization, Sami Dune, on the terrorist list, thus making it illegal even to associate with her organization. So I wanted to point out that the repression extends to countries, settler colonial countries, as she said, such as Canada. Now, as for the UN, yes, if the UN cannot find a way to stop the conflict, it will reduce itself to meaninglessness and oblivion in the same way that the League of Nations was unable to prevent the attacks on the former Abyssinia, which is now Ethiopia, back in the mid-30s. But you know, I'm not giving up all hope now, because I've seen some stirrings within member countries who are upset, very upset, with Israel's attacks on the UNIFIL posts, peacekeeping posts in southern Lebanon, which have taken place over the past few weeks, in which several peacekeepers were injured. None have been killed yet, unlike in 2006, when Israel attacked a post and killed five peacekeepers, including Major Hess von Prudner of Canada. Today, or in the last few days, the several countries who are of the 40 involved in peacekeeping have issued statements that they think it's time to suspend Israel from membership in the United Nations. I certainly hope this goes forward, because I think what has to happen at this point is that the United Nations does to the apartheid regime in Israel equals what it did in the mid-80s against the apartheid regime in South Africa. And I think it means suspending Israel from the United Nations, making sure it's kicked out of FIFA, the Olympics, any kind of social or artistic events that take place around the world, and put it and cut off from its economic relations to all the major powers of the world in the Western world anyway. So I think that I'm hopeful that the UN will start doing something soon. Otherwise, as you say, it may become irrelevant and obsolete.
All right. Well, Charlotte, you know, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and even more now that I know that you're on the list and obviously doing something very effective. So more power to you on that. But, Charlotte, I mean, the genocide on Gaza has taken place throughout the Strip. But why do you think the Israeli regime has been especially brutal against the residents in northern Gaza? You mentioned in the very beginning that that's where it started on October 8th. On the one hand, we have heard that the regime had said that they had basically cleared out Hamas from northern Gaza, that they have gone back a couple of times. What is it about northern Gaza in your perspective?
Well, I think there's a few things. In the first place, they're absolutely trying to continue the process that the Zionist entity has always done, which is the theft of the land of Palestinian people and forcing Palestinians into smaller and smaller areas of land and forcing them out of Palestine. And they want to steal northern Gaza, so that's part of it. There's also the fact that, I mean, Jabalia camp and Jabalia, the city where all of the where this has been centered, has been a center of resistance to Zionist occupation for decades and decades and decades. Jabalia is where the first Intifada in 1987 started. It has been a center of resistance, of organizing, of popular rejection of occupation and colonialism and Zionist destruction for decades upon decades upon decades. And that's something that they'd very much like to erase. I mean, yes, we've seen time and time again, they have repeatedly declared that the north of Gaza is free of the resistance. And of course, they've, you know, done so again. And of course, just yesterday, the resistance in the north of Gaza, it targeted and successfully eliminated the highest ranking Zionist military officer who has been killed in Gaza since the beginning of the war. And of course, this is the person who has been ordering these mass assaults against the civilian population of the north of Gaza. This is the war criminal who has been personally making those orders for the assaults. So you have the combination of wanting to steal the land, of wanting to try to destroy this castle of resistance, you know, that has always been a castle of resistance for the Palestinian people. And it's just an attempt to gain an illusory military victory, because the fact is that the Zionist regime is not achieving any of its claimed military goals. It is not achieving the return of the captives and prisoners of war that are held by the resistance. It is not returning its settlers to the north of occupied Palestine. It is not eliminating the resistance in Palestine or Lebanon. What it is doing is massacring large numbers of the Palestinian and Lebanese civilian population. And so, this is the war plan of the Zionist entity, is just destruction of Palestinians. And it's also something that's being funded and supported and backed by the U.S. and all of its imperialist partners in the West.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I mean, hundreds of thousands of people are still in the northern areas of Gaza. As they say, they have nowhere else to go. And even when they have tried to leave, they have been targeted. There's not only no concept of protecting civilians by the Zionist regime, but in actuality, it targets civilians on purpose. I mean, why is this the case to this degree?
It's the case because the government of Israel is a settler colonial state, and it used fascistic methods to try and exterminate and ethnically cleanse the Palestinians. I sent the Press TV a picture of Pablo Picasso's famous painting, Guernica, which is the world's most famous anti-war painting. It refers to the first time in human history that there was an aerial bombardment of civilian targets in the town of Guernica, Spain, in 1937 during the Spanish Civil War. And since then, the people who do this kind of stuff, that is to say, targeting civilians, such as the Israelis are doing in their genocidal attempts in Gaza or in their carpet bombing of southern or all parts of Lebanon, is similarly fascistic, with the aim of ethnically cleansing and exterminating people who the Israeli state considers to be less than human. Or as I think it was Yoav Gallant, the Minister of Defense of Israel, who called Arabs human animals. So they are therefore. They are therefore able to be slaughtered in the minds of these genocidal maniacs. I think that what we see is a fascistic barbarism, which is carried out by the Israeli regime, but could not go on even one more day, or more than a week anyway, if the countries of the West, including my own country, Canada, and especially the USA, were to let Israel know in no uncertain terms that no more money, no more funding, no more free trade agreements, no more security agreements, no more tax-free charitable donations are going to flow to Israel if this continues.
Right.
And to my mind, if I may add just a small point, this is the thing, these are the things that people in the West should be doing. They should be out on the street, as they were in Toronto yesterday, and I'm sure that in Vancouver too, demanding that our government and all the other governments of the West stop enabling Israeli war crimes.
Okay. Well, Charlotte, I mean, hell on earth is basically how northern Gaza can be described. There's constant bombing, no food, no supplies. Hospitals have been bombed, very little medical aid, no electricity, no communications. I mean, the choice seems to be either choosing a slower death via starvation and dehydration, or a quicker one with a building collapsing on one's head or a sniper shooting as people try to seek safety. I mean, it is hard for me to even get a grip on this, my mind around this and imagining this. I mean, your thoughts, we are looking at more than a year into this, and we're talking about just 600, over 640 people being killed in the last 17 days there.
Yes. I mean, this is what genocide looks like, right? Like, there's existing international law, like the Genocide Convention, which imposes upon all a responsibility to do whatever they can to stop this, to stop genocide, to stop a genocide wherever it is taking place. But instead of seeing, I mean, I think one of the things we're definitely witnessing in this hell on earth in northern Gaza, and really throughout Gaza, throughout the entire past year, what we are witnessing is an exposure of what it means when the Western imperialist powers say, quote unquote, the rules-based international order. Because the rules-based international order does not mean the application of international law. It does not mean that those who are responsible for genocide are going to be prosecuted and brought to justice and held accountable for their crimes. It does not mean that a genocide is going to be stopped. It means that the only option for peoples who are subjected to genocide by imperialists and their partners, including the Zionist entity, is to surrender everything about their rights, their place of living, their existence, their humanity, and their ability to resist. And that is the only option that is available under the rules-based international order, in which the imperialists and Zionists set the rules and everyone else is expected to get an order. This is a total exposure for the alleged system of international law, in which the only forces that are actually living up to their responsibilities under the Genocide Convention are the forces of what we might call the regional resistance or the axis of resistance, with the support of popular movements around the world. And so, you know, we're seeing that certainly the Lebanese resistance and Hezbollah and the people of Lebanon are playing a heroic role in actually in trying to implement the Genocide Convention and the responsibilities of people around the world to stop genocide. And they are being bombarded for that by the Zionist regime, and Germany, the United States, Britain, etc., are helping them be bombarded. We see this in Yemen. We see this in Iraq. We see it in Syria. We see it in Iran. And yet what we are seeing is the imperialist powers declaring the implementation of international law to be terrorism, while the complete impunity of genocidaires is being promoted around the world. And so, you know, fundamentally, if there was ever if it could not be more clear than it is today, looking through the prism of the rubble in northern Gaza and the fires burning with the bombardments of U.S.-made and provided weaponry that's paid for by U.S. tax dollars, you know, against the people. Who in this world is standing for justice and humanity, and who in this world is standing against it? And of course, as Ken was saying, you know, the fact is that in the heart of the imperial core, masses of people are in the streets, tens of thousands of people on a daily and weekly basis, saying that we want an end to this genocide, that this isn't the system that we want to be a part of. But the ruling class has shown itself to be absolutely impervious to these demands, even when it comes with an electoral cost for themselves, because they're much more interested in the long-term preservation of the Zionist regime.
Indeed.
As an outpost of imperialism to plunder the resources and wealth of the people of the region.
Right, yeah, good point. Well, Ken, at the same time that the regime is continuing with this genocide in Gaza, it has increased its bombing campaign in Lebanon, hitting various parts of the country, killing more civilians there. Now, the U.S. envoy is in Lebanon talking about a ceasefire. Your thoughts about that? How can the U.S. Be an unbiased broker to a ceasefire when it is in actuality a party involved in the genocide?
This is part of the negligence of the UN and its leaders. The U.S. is not a neutral arbitrator or mediator. It is a belligerent in both these battle theaters, as Charlotte mentioned. Without the U.S. Funds and arms pouring in, this conflict could not go on. I would like, and I'm glad that she raised the bigger picture of West Asia, because Israel, I'll wait a second on that. To finish on that thought, the fact is that the mediation process, the shuttle diplomacy of Anthony Blinken, should be terminated at once, and it should be replaced by a team of countries that have the confidence and respect of the other members of the UN to set up a peace process or a peace conference in which the U.S. is not involved. And in that way, we might get towards the long desired, lasting peace and comprehensive solution, peace solution for Israel and Palestine. So I think that the U.S. should be taken out of the picture completely. But the big picture that Charlotte was referring to has to do with West Asia. And it's Israel has more than the plan to depopulate southern Lebanon and Gaza and seize the seafloor resources and everything like that. They have a plan to start a war with Iran and eliminate all the governments in West Asia that are not compliant to the U.S. empire and to the state of Israel. And I'm referring specifically to Iran and Syria and Yemen. And I think that if Israel goes ahead and attacks Iran, it may in fact spark a regional war, which could easily lead to a nuclear confrontation between the great powers, because Iran has the backing of very important countries of the world, such as Russia and China. It's a very, very dangerous situation that right. The Zionists and the U.S. empire is putting us, our children, and grandchildren into.
Yeah. Well, Charlotte, you know, the U.S. talks about UN Resolution 1701, which, of course, brought an end to the 33-day war between Hezbollah and Israel, 2006. However, the main part that they continue to reiterate is a part about Hezbollah disarming. I want to talk about this. When we look at the last year of what has happened, would there be any entity that would think that Hezbollah would disarm? And just for the sake of just looking at this, what would it mean if Hezbollah disarmed? What would it mean for Lebanon? What would it mean for the region?
Well, it's very clear that if Hezbollah disarmed, particularly right at this moment, what we're looking at is actually disaster for Lebanon, for Palestine, and for the entire region, because Hezbollah is the force that is defending Lebanon from Zionist conquest. This isn't the people of Lebanon are being attacked because they actually refuse to abandon Palestine, and they refuse to abandon Gaza, and they refuse to abandon their distinguished stance of taking the required and necessary stand against genocide, which so much of the rest of the world is completely failing to do. But they are also being attacked because, I mean, settlers in occupied Palestine are putting out material about Lebanon is our land and our home. The fact is the only reason that the south of Lebanon right now in its entirety is not being occupied by the Zionist regime is because Hezbollah led the Lebanese resistance to liberate that land, a victory that was accomplished in full on the 25th of May 2000. And, you know, that was one of the major incidents that helped to lead to the uprising in Palestine in 2000 as well, the Al-Aqsa Intifada, because it showed that it was possible for Arab peoples to successfully liberate their land through a project of resistance. that's the only reason why the south of Lebanon isn't being dominated by the Zionist regime, why there isn't still a collaborationist army called the South Lebanon Army that's imprisoning people, that's imprisoning Lebanese people in torturous prisons like Hiyam. It's because the resistance liberated that land. And it's not possible for the resistance to disarm itself so long as the occupation continues to occupy Sheba Farms, continues to occupy Kfar Shuba, continues to occupy the land of the south of Lebanon. I mean, right now, Hezbollah is the front line of defense of the Lebanese people, of the Palestinian people, and all of the people of the region against an absolutely rapacious and brutal imperialist Zionist force that is a threat to Lebanon and to all of humanity.
Indeed. And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Charlotte Cates, international coordinator, Sam Adun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver. And best of luck with what you're going through, by the way, Charlotte. And Ken Stone, executive committee member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War on Hamilton. Thanks so much. And thank you for being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.